Welcome, extempers, speech and debaters, and everyone else listening to this podcast. Today is a cold and dreary day and about to rain outside, and that's why I'm in a hoodie right now. But we are going to be talking about Great Britain. I know this episode is long overdue. This is our second time recording this episode because right after we finished recording it, it was Liz Truss. And then she resigned after. So we had to update it a little bit. And it took a bit of time to like plan out this recording. But we're here now. So we're going to talk about Great Britain. And we're going to bring up things that you probably already know before. And hopefully bring up some things that you don't know. So yeah, as always, I'm you.
I'm Spencer.
And welcome to the half hour. Wow, we haven't done that intro in like a hot minute because I think we just assume our usual listeners are listening to this podcast. But yeah, we're not British experts, something we should mention. I don't do international relations as a major anymore. I think it's interesting. I keep up with it, but it's not like my major. However, Spencer, political science, meaning that he does engage with international science or international relations every now and again. So he knows a bit about Britain. I know a bit about Britain from what I've read in the news. But again, we are not British experts. We're not British. We are not British citizens. We've never been to the UK, or at least I've never been to the UK. So take that, do with that what you will. But we are here to help you kind of guide you through how you should answer some extemp questions revolving around Britain and to understand the general concept of how British Parliament works.
So I have been to the UK for a small period of time. I've gone to London, but that's besides the point. That's really like nothing compared to the rest of the UK. But yeah. Great Britain, really the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, if you want to be really specific, but for purposes of the episode, I think we'll just call it the United Kingdom, right, UU? I'll probably refer to it as England sometimes, or Britain, because, well, probably more Britain, but yeah, hooray, we're recording this in the morning, that's weird, and it's not only just raining outside of UU's place, it's been snowing here. It's very cold. It's not even like 15 out right now. So, hooray for Laramie, Wyoming weather. My apartment's cold. So is UU's. As per usual. Man, you could tell I woke up an hour ago. Hey, to explain how these episodes go, if you're new, we start with just a little bit of housekeeping. We already did that. We're still not British experts. Then we're going to provide with a little bit of background information. This episode, I'm going to start, and then we're going to follow it up by UU. Then we're going to do some possible questions. So stay tuned for that. And then the show will end. One other quick housekeeping thing. We've got a poll. Go vote on it. Thank you. The poll is also on YouTube. So go check our YouTube out and vote on the poll. Anyway, without any further ado, man, I got a lot of energy for being awake after 1 hour. Without any further ado, let's go ahead and start. First, let's talk about the British system and how it works as it relates to this discussion. The British system is a monarchy and not a democracy. There are democratic elements to the elected officials, however, it is the monarchy that is the most important in Britain. Let's start with one important piece. The head of state and the head of government. So what are these two, and what is a good example of them in the United States? Well, the head of state deals mostly with international relations and foreign affairs. So this person is most associated with ensuring that how other countries work with the country that they are ruling. The head of government deals with running the government. Duh. They mainly deal with issues associated with bills and the future of domestic affairs. The United States is kind of weird in the fact that President Joe Biden, under Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, is both the head of state and the head of government. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about talking about this topic and comparing it to the United States. In Britain, the head of state would actually be the king or the queen. They deal primarily with international relations and building connections with foreign leaders across the globe. You would probably know that after Queen Elizabeth's death, that she met with several U.S. presidents. I can't think of the number off the top of my head. And that really goes to show that U.S. presidents go to the queen at the time to build international relations with Britain. So that's kind of their primary role. The head of state would be the prime minister, as their role is primarily associated with running the government and adhering to what the citizens want. To put this in perspective, Britain has changed both their head of state and head of government recently, and then recently again. This is in part because of Queen Elizabeth II's death, and then Boris Johnson's resignation, and then Liz Truss's resignation. So now it is King Charles III and Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. But wait, neither of them were elected. Why is that? Well, the king and queen can only be a part of the bloodline of the royal family, so there's that. However, the prime minister is a different method of selection. This person is normally selected by the majority party in parliament. Yet, a majority party is not the same as it is in the US. Instead, it is what is called a coalition, which means that a number of parties formulate together to create a government. Once there is a 51% group of parties, there is officially a majority party and a minority party, even though these are parties that still express separate interests. So, where do the citizens come into this? Well, the citizens elect parties and not people. On the ballot, they will be voting for the Conservative Party, the Social Democratic Party, the Green Party, or even everyone's favorite, the Communist Party. And typically, the Communist Party is for removing the monarchy in Britain, so make what you want out of that. And actually, there is, I believe if I understand correctly, there is two different types of Communist Parties. You have those that are in the Communist Party that want communism, and then you have what is called the Revolutionary Communists, which want complete anarchy. Once the votes have been cast, then each party fills a number of seats through appointment based on the percentage of votes the party has received. Then the government forms and decides who it wants as each of its ministers. Boris Johnson just resigned, so the majority party, the Conservative Party, originally selected Liz Truss, but now they have selected Rishi Sunak. Queen Elizabeth II, after enacting Truss as Prime Minister, did ask Truss to make a new government, which is also part of the Constitution. That didn't happen. And now there's a massive controversial debate, as we will get to later, about whether a new government should really be formed through an election. Just a quick note, the next British elections are in 2025. So the British system is quite complicated. Another quick side note, the Conservative Party in Britain is like the Democratic Party in the US. It's confusing, but it's the way it is. All in all, this is how the system works. And while it seems simple, it does give a ton of power to the Prime Minister and the royal family. Essentially, the House of Parliament is useless, but this is for a later episode and or discussion. For now, it is important to understand how the government works and why all of this is a big deal in Britain's political world, which is where UU is going next.
Yeah, so basically everything that Spencer's told you is what you need to know to understand the intricacies of my section and like why these things are such big deals and why it's created so much tension among British Parliament and British citizens as well. So as some of you may know, the UK has undergone multiple changes. The biggest one that you all might be aware of is that the Queen died. You might not know that Liz Truss was Prime Minister for a little bit. You might not know who the new Prime Minister is, but we'll get into that. So the Queen's death does play a role, we'll also talk about that too. Mainly though, let's talk about Liz Truss, because I think that's someone that we might not be too familiar with, especially since she was only in office for like a month and a half. So let's talk about that. Before the Queen's death, former Prime Minister Liz Truss was sworn after Boris Johnson's resignation. Her becoming Prime Minister was sort of a controversial topic because you either thought she wasn't going to do well or that she was just going to crash and burn. There was some hope that she could have pulled through as Prime Minister, done the tasks right, but as the administration kind of went on, Liz Truss wasn't proving to be a effective Prime Minister, and her policies just weren't as fleshed out as everyone liked them to be. So the struggles that she mainly faced were economic and political, but the biggest ones have been economic issues that she needs to resolve. In Britain, the cost of living has increased to its inflation, which is currently at 10%, is expected to hit like 13% in the next month, which is this month that we were entering in. Energy costs have also been increasing so much so that it could be bankrupt businesses and push millions of families into destitution if nothing is done about it. There are also ongoing labor strikes in many industries like the railroad industry and postal industries. And this is mainly due to labor talks being unresolved because companies aren't willing to budge or workers are demanding something and negotiations are stalling because the companies don't want to give workers like their compensation or whatever it is that they can't resolve within the talks between the industries and the workers working with that industry. But to counteract the immediate economic hardships, Truss's plan was to implement an emergency fiscal package to try to mitigate these crises. And this plan did go into effect for a little bit while she was prime minister, but it's currently, I think, not in plan or not in action anymore because she has resigned. But the plan was to cap household energy bills at £2,500 annually, which is roughly about $2,800. And to put that into perspective, the average US family pays roughly $1,400 annually on their energy bill, which compared to like $2,800 is significantly more than what we would expect to pay in the United States, at least. The main focus for Truss is to lower inflation and to prevent a recession from occurring. Where the money will come from to offset the differences between energy bills and the cap is yet to be decided, and we'll probably never even figure out where any of the new funding might come from for Rishi Sunak's plan anyway. So I think that's something that you should take away with just in your speeches and into other rounds, is that plans are murky. We don't know where the money is coming from. We don't even know if they have like a specific plan in action or like a specific vision into how they're going to deal with their economic hardships. But it seems like it might have to come from borrowing money to fund the differences. But at the very least, they do have to hike up taxes to gain some sort of revenue back. Truss's approach to economics could be compared to the likes of Reaganomics, where there are heavy tax cuts and an aim towards promoting a free market and putting more money in the people's pockets. But if we've learned a thing or two from tax cuts, and especially like Reaganomics, is that they haven't benefited the people who needed it the most, but they've benefited the rich. So yeah, you could say that basically left the middle class and lower classes behind with these tax cuts because it wasn't directed towards them. And this has been the policy that has faced tons of backlash from her colleagues and people alike, and probably mainly one of the reasons why she had to resign as prime minister, because she couldn't go on and it wasn't like she wasn't being that receptive as prime minister as well. So especially when you look at the stats and also the wages for the wealthy, it's grown with inflation is what most economists have made analysis about. So while wages for the lower and middle class is not or has not like grown with inflation or has even declined in value, and you see that the plan is to have tax cuts or is to even direct some like debt relief or like financial relief to the wealthy, you're obviously not going to be happy about that as someone who's not like in the wealthy class. And that is where the majority of the backlash Liz Truss face was, and part of the reason why people did not like her politics and did not like her economics. but Moore talks about kind of how the economy is going to function in the next couple of months, and also under Rishi Sunak, we will basically see, because even now plans are not as concrete, and Rishi Sunak has not specifically stated like what it is he is going to do to revamp their economy and hopefully recover from the damages of COVID-19 and global supply chain shocks. But on the political side of things, Truss had to deal with the politics of trying to ensure the Conservative Party will win the next general election and that things go smoothly after the passing of the Queen. This is also falling onto Rishi Sunak too, is that like politics will come with the position of prime minister, just like economic issues will come with the position of prime minister as well. But what Truss had to deal with was mainly gaining public trust and support to ensure that the Conservative Party will win and that her party members are receptive to her policies. But the reason why a third of the party wanted to see her as prime minister anyway is because she was optimistic about handling all of the issues that Britain is facing and seemed to have a plan to resolve many of its issues. But we know that that wasn't necessarily true, because her plan didn't go as according to plan. But Truss had also, to deal with the death of the Queen, who was a pillar of stability during a time when the UK is definitely like not as stable as could be. And after her death, now the 15 countries that recognize the former queen as their head of state is reconsidering that role for their country. These countries include Australia, New Zealand, Jamaica, and other countries. On top of that, Scotland believed that Truss was just going to sink, and she ultimately did. So whether or not Britain can be a pillar of stability and whether or not those countries that recognize the monarchy as like their monarchy is yet to be seen as well. Like, those tensions are still resolving itself, but we do know that they're not as receptive to King Charles. But that also begs the question of Rishi Sunak. Is he going to fare much better? How did he even come into power? It is good to note that he is the first prime minister of Britain that is a person of color, and that's something that is very notable, especially for the UK, where previously it has not been open to people of color. On top of that, like, Boris Johnson was in the running after Liz Truss resigned. He did get the number of support that he needed, the number of support from people that he needed to get. And he was in the running before he dropped out of the running, and which left Rishi Sunak as the other option. He did have a competitor, but she was not able to get the same amount of support or like enough votes in order to be in the running for prime minister, and not like be in the running for general people to vote who's going to be the next prime minister, but be in the running as in who is parliament going to choose next to put as prime minister. And I just want to mention that even though he became prime minister regardless with the support of people in parliament, that doesn't mean he's favorable. It's unclear if he's up for the task to be prime minister anyway, as he's facing similar economic problems that he needs to address effectively. He talked about how he was going to fix the spending fiasco proposed by Truss, but never clearly outlined what that was going to entail. I'll also make the analysis that his success as prime minister is definitely going to bank on whether he can resolve the economic issues that Britain is facing, because that is on everyone's minds. But not only that, he's facing calls for a general election to replace him, which doesn't look good for the Conservative Party in Parliament, which has the majority right now. And the reason why his popularity has dipped is mainly because of his economics not being as clearly laid out as people would like it to. But secondly, because of his connection to the United States, he is a Stanford grad, took a lot from Stanford, and likes US policies in certain areas and has brought that with him as chancellor previously to becoming prime minister. But the biggest thing the biggest reason why people don't like him is because he has a pretty significant amount of wealth, which people perceive as something that would interfere with his economic policies and how he's going to go about resolving their issues. Some say he's a reflection of the old type of politics and a Davos man, which basically is pointing out the hypocrisy of his status as a wealthy elite, but with the aim of solving the world's problems, right? think back to the feeling of like, do I really trust this person to help me if they are the ones that are not in the position that I am, right? Like, and they haven't experienced that before. That's basically people's perception of him. But this is something on the mind of people because he will ultimately have to hike up taxes to an extent, as well as find places where he can cut spending so that the UK has enough spending to kind of like bounce back. Yet how that interacts with domestic and international standing will definitely reflect on Sunak's reputation. His success will be dependent on a lot of things, but I think the economy will be the biggest one. So yeah, lots of complicated politics.
Yeah, Britain is definitely going through a bit of a mess. And originally we were going to have like two questions about the new, when we first recorded this, we were going to have two questions about like the new regime and everything that's been going on with the change from the Queen to the King and from Johnson to Liz Truss. But now it's almost more like, there's a lot of things that are happening in Britain, and the bigger question is, with all the political troubles, now it's, should the next British Prime Minister call for a general election? So that's the question for today. Should Rishi Sunak call for a general election? Basically, get people to vote again on the members of parliament reforms, creates new coalitions, and elects new prime ministers. Yu, I'm going to go ahead and give you the starting ground here. But we definitely have a pretty complex question. I mean, it's short and sweet, but it's rather complicated today.
Yeah, this is a lot of pressure. I think like, if we think about it politically and what's good for the Conservative Party in Britain, right? Like, probably good to think about it in this context because they are the party in power and they're the ones with higher stakes when it comes to calling a general election. So should Rishi Sunak call for a general election? I would say probably not, because I don't think at this moment in time he has enough public support to which he can ensure that his conservative majority, or at least like voting in a conservative majority that will support him as prime minister, is going to be like as successful as it might have been previously. So I think like the biggest issue here is people's grievances are with mainly economic issues and with political issues that they just haven't had to deal with or thought about until like COVID happened, until supply chain shocks, until like European politics came into play and Ukraine war with Russia, things like that happened. And now that all of these things are happening and it seems like they're going bad, obviously their first instinct is to blame like the party in power, which they don't really have direct control over, in which like it's not as a democracy as the United States is, where we feel like we have like some sort of influence, some sort of say in like votes and stuff, right? Like, it's not the same. If they were to be voting in a new parliament, that would just basically mean, are we going to vote for the people that we've voted for before, who are like not really doing things that we want them to do, or not like resolving the issues that we need to be resolved, in which case there is a likely chance that they're not going to be voting in a conservative majority, which would be bad for the party and bad for Rishi Sunak as prime minister, because most likely they're going to pressure him to resign and call in another prime minister that may be more like left-wing in terms of British politics. But I don't know. I think that like this question is tricky because there are a lot of things that you have to consider. But I definitely do think that a good thing to consider is kind of like people's reception of Rishi Sunak and of the Conservative Party currently, because that is going to determine like who they're going to vote for and also like who is going to end up in Parliament, what the majority is going to look like, and how that's going to affect politics in the future.
So as per usual with all of these, Yu and I don't really talk about these questions because that's what makes this fun, right? It's what allows us to turn around and kind of debate it out a little bit and give the different perspectives. I actually really like that answer from Yu. I don't agree with it, though. I think that the answer to this should be yes. And my reasoning is, my thought is this. I think if the question is more of should, right? I kind of see it more of like the moral, what's the morally right way to look at this, right? If you were to think about this in a way that is reasonable, that should be done in the right manner, should Rishi Sunak call for a new general election? Yes. And the reason why is because there have been so many changes that have happened in Britain recently. And my thinking is the Conservative Party there, even though they might recognize that they can lose this election, and they probably will, there is no reason that they shouldn't look favorably on what the public wants, right? If the public wants a new regime or new regime as in new coalition, new people running, new prime minister, right? Then let that be up to the people, right? I think that that's something that the Conservative Party should stand for and should turn around and say, we want our people to vote for what they want in government, right? It's been a little bit since they've had an election, and their next one isn't until 2025. And people's perceptions about the government have, in fact, changed pretty significantly, considering that there have been 3 prime ministers in the last 2 months. Hey, 2 or 3 months. So it's kind of insane to think that Rishi Sunak doesn't go for this idea of, we're not going to call for a general election. Because for some people, that may look even worse on the Conservative Party when it comes to 2025. So in some ways, I think that Rishi Sunak should call for a general election because it gives a good favorable view for the Conservative Party. Maybe as a future election comes down, it may not lead them to win, but it does give them the right moral thing to do, to recognize, okay, the people don't like the way this government is set up right now. They don't like the system that's in place. Let's go ahead and let's redo these elections. Let's put them back into place and see what changes, right? And honestly, that's never a bad idea. Hey, even though it's a coalition government, a coalition government could go any way. It could be formatted to where the Conservative Party gets the second most votes, but ends up being in the majority party, right? So it could end up as a win for them, even though it might not look like it on paper. So it kind of depends on like how you want to look at what happens afterwards. And I kind of think maybe you could disagree with me here, but I think this question really is more about what happens after the general election, more so than what happens before it. Obviously, there's a lot of situations that are going on now politically that involve the impact of this. But for the most part, the Conservative Party is the one here that, they can still technically win the election by losing the election in a lot of ways, to where they can, once again, form the majority party in a coalition. So kind of depends on where you want to go with this, but I'll leave that up to you here.
Yeah, I think I personally agree with you. I think they should just call for a general election regardless, because like people seem like they have a lot of grievances that they want to express. It's probably good for the people themselves and to also like listen to your people to kind of like, resolve these tensions and not have such high tensions, and also to like have your democratic values be upheld. But I think it also depends for this question, not for like personal opinion, how we think about politics and things like that, but for this question to think about it as like, what is in the best interest of Parliament and what is in the best interest of the people and what is in the best interests of both? Because I think those are the angles that you can take with this question in itself. Like, I took an angle of like, what is best for Parliament right now is it doesn't seem like a good idea to call for a general election because it seems like it would make their party lose, which is not something that is in the goals of the party, right? And would cause a lot of like tensions within the party itself. And that might not be good for Rishi Sunak because he is like the party's leader as prime minister by default. And also that like he hasn't settled in as much as I think he should have before he called for the general election. So it could be like a time issue. Maybe they'll call the general election later when he is more settled or when things seem a little less tense, or maybe when like his plans do actually come into fruition and is working. Maybe that might be a better time. But like currently, it seems that what is in the interest of the Conservative Party, if they want to keep kind of the majority in Parliament, is not the call for that general election. It's kind of like where I was going with that. But if you look at it from the perspective of like what is good for both the people and Parliament, is where you get Spencer's answer, where it is good because it could benefit Parliament, or it could benefit the Conservative Party in a different way, in that it's not like directly benefiting them and like having them keep the majority in Parliament, but it is still benefiting them in that they don't look authoritarian or that they're trying to suppress the voices of the people and cause strikes and cause like riots, things like that. And it's also something that is good for the public because it could keep up morale where you have like a decision and a say in what's going on in politics, and upholding some sort of democratic values within the UK could be good for like citizens still having trust in their government and still having trust in like in Parliament and in the monarchical system. Or like you could take it full on, I support the people, like I want to take a look at it from the people's incentive, that type of way, is when you could also say something like, okay, I think that they should call for a general election, talk about like democratic values, be more focused on that, be more focused on how a general election could help people in changing the makeup of Parliament from not being like a Conservative majority to some other majority party. So that changes can happen in a different way, or maybe like the new prime minister has a different vision of how they want to go about changing things to help people thrive and to like ensure that the economy of Britain is still going to be like viable, healthy in the future. I think like these would be really interesting views to kind of take and to kind of think about when you're thinking about this question. Because to me, this is like, not only a morality question, but it can be viewed as also like an incentives question in terms of what lens, what group, what party are you looking through, and what is incentivizing them to do what?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of all about the angle you want to take this. Compared to our question last week, or the last episode, or whenever that, whenever 40 gets published, hasn't been published as of this recording. But like that question, obviously, not really an angle you can take. Like, there's a couple different options you have, and you can choose what options you want to go with, right? But for the most part, it's pretty set in stone. This one is, you can go a few different ways. You could even go and argue something that I think you brought it up just a little bit, but you could argue that Rishi Sunak could just wait for a little bit, right? Maybe it's, we don't do these elections until 2023, maybe in the middle of 2023. And either you wait for a lot of support from the people or a lot of rejection from the people, one or the other, right? I personally think that public response, I personally think that if he doesn't go for it now, if it's needed for him to resign, then he should. And that's kind of like that is the breaking point. Like, you can't go any further. You can't keep doing this, right? Because the public is going to continue to hate on it. So it's like, at what point in time do you call, do you say this is going to happen? If Sunak ends up prime minister all the way to the next general election, that's cool. Okay. That, okay. I don't really see there being a problem. And I see you use answer being more right, right? No reason to do that. Keep the majority party, right? No incentive, right? He could do it now, which is probably morally best. He gets what the people want today. But if it comes to a situation where he has to resign, he absolutely needs to call for a general election. I don't think that we should be seeing him resign. I think that we should be seeing him call for an election. Like, that is the breaking point. Like, you've had, this country's had three prime ministers literally in 3 months, right? At what, like, that's kind of where I'm going, is at what point in time do you call this done, right? You can't keep doing this. And the Conservative Party will definitely be viewed unfavorably if that continues. So Sunak will, if he has to resign, will face pretty much a more tough, a tougher version of this question, which will be, should you resign or should you call for the general election, right? So, at some, like, I kind of think that this is the question that will haunt Sunak for the entirety of his time as prime minister. It started the day he was in, and will go all the way till the general election if he keeps it. So there is really not much he can do here, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think, like, a lot of questions are going to haunt Rishi in his time as prime minister. Like, what am I going to do for the economy? What am I going to do for the people? How am I going to gain favor? You know, things like that. I think, like, Britain's going through a rough patch, and it'll really show, like, where your leadership skills are and who you are as a leader in the way that you deal with it. And that's why we see, like, people like Boris Johnson cracking under pressure, Liz Truss cracking under pressure. Maybe Rishi Sunak is going to feel the same, crack under pressure and resign. But, you know, ultimately, when we think about everything that's happening and, like, how things are going, he's not resigned yet. So that is a good sign. But there are definitely articles out there, and there are definitely, like, perspectives out there that question, you know, whether or not he is going to stay in power, like, whether or not he is still receptive among the public and among parliament.
Absolutely.
Again, thank you everyone so much for listening and being patient with us on the Brent episode. Maybe some of you were expecting it. Maybe some of you were not. Maybe some of you are like, grr, where's my Brent episode? But here it is. So thank you all for supporting us, listening to our episodes, subscribing on YouTube, which you should if you haven't done already. So without further ado, I hope that you get the win in the round. If you don't, let us know how you did. Let us know how we did. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to DM either me or Spencer on our social media platforms. We are available almost all of the time. So just hit us up, you know. If you can't hit us up on our own personal devices, platforms, then feel free to follow us at the Half Hour Extent Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, or Elon Musk Twitter. Maybe hinting at a new episode, I don't know, vote on the poll. But yeah, feel free to hit us up there. Don't forget to vote on the polls. We're going to have one out hopefully, I think, this week, or maybe like beginning of next week, because it is the weekend and maybe we don't get a lot of reception on the weekend. But yeah, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, ring that bell so that you're notified of our episodes. Our episodes get posted onto YouTube earlier. than it does when we clap. So do that. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for hearing our thoughts on Britain, even though we're not British experts. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. We will see you in the next episode.
If you follow us on Twitter, don't give us the blue check mark. Thank you all so much for watching, and until next time, I will see you all later.